Welcome to episode 2 of the Brighton Book Club on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, a show dedicated to all things literary and bookish in the city. You can get involved on Twitter using the Brighton Book Club hashtag, email me at btnbookclub@gmail.com, and follow our brand new Instagram account, BTN Book Club, run by the lovely Ben. The show is also available as a podcast. Just search Brighton Book Club wherever you get your ear candy. Can't believe I just said ear candy on the radio. Thank you to lovely Ben at Reverb for doing such a sterling job of getting the show up off the ground and into your ears. We've had some really, really good feedback so far, so do keep it coming. We've got a great show for you today. I'm going to be introducing emerging author Tamye Huff, who's written a great book called A More Perfect Union, based on the relationship between her great-great-grandparents set in 1848. Local author Amanthi Harris will also be joining us. Her new book, Beautiful Place, has already received some rave reviews. Local bookseller Elizabeth Perry will be joining me from City Books in Hove to talk about what should be on your reading radar, and also joining me to talk about this month's book club selection, Leonard and Hungry Paul. As we're a studio of women today, I thought I'd play My Girls by Animal Collective. Welcome back to the Brighton Book Club on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM. I am delighted to be joined in the studio by Tamye Huff. Tamye, please can you introduce yourself and talk a bit about your background as a writer?
Hi, first of all, thank you so much for having me. I'm so pleased to be here. So thank you for that. And my background, yeah, I am American, as I'm sure everybody can hear, originally from America, but I've been here for 20 years. I have a husband and 3 kids. And my writing background, back in my uni days, back in America, and went to Wellesley in Massachusetts, I have a degree in English, but I did an honors thesis in creative writing. I've written a number of short stories, which have been published in literary magazines. I was recently awarded third place for the London Magazine Short Story Prize, and I've now completed my debut novel, A More Perfect Union, so I'm really excited about that.
The book is based on a true story, right?
It is. It's actually, the heart of the story comes from the family legend of my great-great-grandparents. He was from Ireland, and she was a slave, and he bought her freedom to marry her. And so that's kind of the inspiration of the story. It's about identity. It's about him giving up his Irish name because of anti-Irish prejudices. It's about her identity as a slave, but then also being much more than a slave. It's about belonging, the emotional belonging of to a place or a person, and also that very strange situation of a legal belonging of a person to another person. And mostly it's about love. It's a love story. It's about him and her falling in love in this very unusual and unexpected time and place.
How did you go about researching it? Because it's a big story and a long time ago. Where did you start?
Books, basically. Mm-hmm. Books and legends, and just looking up old documents, reading so much. I think it's a really interesting time in history. The book is set in 1849. And you had so many interesting historical things going on. You, of course, had the famine in Ireland going on, and you had slavery going on, but you also had the westward expansion in America. You had the gold rush of 49, actually, at that time. You had the abolitionist movement picking up. It was really a very interesting time, especially in U.S. history. It was right before the Compromise of 1850, which actually postponed the Civil War for another decade. And so there was so much going on. There's actually a lot of literature about that time. It was really very interesting to look into.
Do you think it's important for all of us to kind of really think about where we're from and look at our family histories and kind of immortalize it through that? Because, you know, there will be a point where these stories, you know, will stop. Potentially stop being told. What do you think the importance of family legacy stories are?
I think knowing your history helps you to understand who you are. Mm-hmm. I think they are very important. And I think your past remains with you in your present. We are who we are because of who we've been and who our ancestors have been. There's a great quote by Faulkner, a line that he wrote, "The past is never dead, it's not even past," and I absolutely agree with that. And I think because of that, it's really so important that we do know and invest into history and legacies.
Did you come across anything that really shocked you? in your research?
Yes, actually. I have to admit, I didn't know very much about the famine when I went into this. And I was surprised to find out that it lasted years and years and years. I was surprised to find out about the very harsh treatment, the evictions. I was surprised that there was food in Ireland when this was going on. And then back in the U.S. side of things, I have to say I did know more about the treatment of the slaves and the slave punishments, but there were some new ones. You know, you sort of know about the hacking off of body parts and putting people in barrels with nails and rolling them down hills. The new one for me was putting people into a smokehouse and smoking them like a, you know, like a ham or something. So there were some horrible things. But there was also a really happy surprise that I found out that my great-great-grandparents were not alone in this interracial relationship in pre-Civil War South. I found documentation of a number of other couples who actually were able to get past the racial barrier and to fall in love and be together. So that was actually a very nice surprise.
What? So the book is unpublished at the moment, right?
It is unpublished.
So as an author, when you were writing it, what kind of communities were you part of? So you're from not quite around Brighton, are you? Is that right?
No. I live up in Walton-on-Thames. Mm-hmm. And I have a lovely writers group, critique mm-hmm. group, up there in Surrey where I live. People have been very, very supportive and responsive. I also have a fantastic critique group up in London. We're mm-hmm. from all different parts of the UK, and we sort of converge into London once a month, and that has been very, very helpful and very supportive. So I think in writing it, for me personally as a writer, it's so important to get reactions, reader reactions, but not just regular readers, if you will, mm-hmm. writers who are also readers. I found that extremely helpful.
What's success for you as an author?
Success. I would love to for my book to find a readership of people who enjoy it, who appreciate it, who it speaks to, who can engage with it. And I think for this particular book, in these sort of strange racial climate that we're in with division and strife, I do hope that a book like this could help to show people that, you know, there is unity is also a way, and just help to bring people forward.
Tammy, thank you so much. What advice would you give to anyone that's an aspiring writer at the moment to get that novel draft finished?
I would say, advice, I would say, write. I mean, I think the main thing is that you keep writing. I think oftentimes you want to just have it done so well that you're afraid to put something to paper. And I think one of the most important things is to write, even though you know it's not good, even though you know it can be improved and you can do better, because you can't edit a blank page, and you can always go back and fix it. So just keep writing, I would say. Yeah.
I asked you to choose a song today that you feel kind of reflects the theme of the book and something that was maybe going through your head as you were writing it. Would you tell us a bit about that song before we play it?
Yes. So the song is called Sylvie. It's by Sweet Honey in the Rock, an a cappella women's group. And it is likely a plantation song. It's from America. It's first recorded in the 30s, and I just really love the sort of the mournful longing of the song. As I was writing the book, I did often listen to Negro spirituals and these sort of songs to get my mind into that mindset, and this is just a really, really lovely one.
Thank you very much for coming on the show, Tamye, and we're going to play this song now. And for anyone that wants to stay in touch with you or find out about your work, how can they do that?
My website mm-hmm. is tammyhoof.com. That's tammyehuf.com. Mm-hmm. It's an unusual spelling, so I always spell it. But there you can find links to different short stories that have been published onto literary magazines. And if you add your name to my mailing list, then I will definitely let you know when and where you can get a copy of my A More Perfect Union.
Thank you very much. Welcome back to the Brighton Book Club on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM. I am joined in the studio by Lewis local author Amanthi Harris, who has just written a beautiful book called Beautiful Place.
Hi.
Can you introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about your book, please, Amanthi?
I'm a writer and artist, and I've done some storytelling, and I used to do community storytelling in the woods, and I've done lots of different things. In a very long time ago, I was a lawyer. I trained as a lawyer. I worked as a bookseller, and lots of things. But the book, I've been writing it for about 10 years, actually, when I counted it all up. It took a long time.
It is long as well.
It is a long book, yes, and it did grow. I've written other things in the meantime, short stories and a novella. So it's a book set in Sri Lanka, where I grew up. In a little guest house on a remote stretch of coast, and it's about the people who run the guest house and all the guests that come there, and the way they have different needs and things they were hoping for and longings when they arrived, and all the stories that unfold.
Can you read us a little bit from it, please?
Of course.
Thank you.
The first paragraph, chapter one. Through the early morning house, Padma went out to the veranda. A breeze came in from the sea, easing in past the aralia trees. Ever since returning to the villa, she'd had nightmares. In them, she was always a child, alone at night in the villa's garden, then propelled by an unseen force into a room, and it was the front room of the brothel down the lane as she had seen it one time when the black polythene over the windows flew up with the wind. Plastic chairs pushed up against the walls, bottles of arak, beer in buckets of ice, and men. There were always men. In the dream, they crowded over her. She had woken up safe in her room at the villa, but the fear stayed real, fear of the sheer randomness of her luck. For it was only luck, illogical, slight, unfathomable, that had lifted her to safety. Luck didn't make you feel lucky. Being saved didn't make you feel safe.
Wow, that's amazing. What an opening. Tell me about the response that you've had to the book so far.
So it's only been out for a few weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And I've had very nice messages from people on Facebook and mm-hmm. Instagram and things. Still sort of waiting for reviews. It's also been published in India and Sri Lanka at the same time.
Amazing.
By Pam Macmillan. And so they have also started to get interest from the newspapers there, and various bloggers have started to sort of murmur nice things. So quietly excited.
So could you tell us a little bit about the process of writing it and how you came to write it and find a home for it?
Well, I actually, it didn't start off as a novel. I was writing short stories at the time. And it sort of came about also because I'd had another book that was had a lot of interest, and then nothing happened with that. So I was unable to write. So I worked on my portfolio and applied to art college, and I got into St. Martin's and I was studying sculpture, and that's when I started writing. And I was drawing on sketchbooks and things of a trip to Sri Lanka, and so I started inventing what this world. And so initially it was the guests that came to the villa that I was interested in, and their stories, and they formed separate stories, and both were published. But then I got curious about the actual place they were staying in and who owned such a place, and it was a place where people could dream and hope and love, and I started to think about how such a place could exist and who would own such a place, and so these people grew, and then that became this huge project, and the world of the villa itself became very big and real, and so then it did become a novel.
It's I always like to ask writers as well about advice that they've been given mm-hmm. as a writer and advice that they would give out. What's the best advice that you've been given as a writer?
I've been given as a writer is to work really hard on the editing and structure. Mm. It's one thing kind of being inspired and being able to write beautiful kind of descriptions and settings and even, you know, characters, but it has to form a coherent whole, and that was the best advice I've been given, certainly. And probably my own advice would be to do something that you really love, that you want for yourself, that you want to explore or inquire about, because then, you know, whether you get published or not, you've still done something worthwhile and wonderful for yourself. And the learning, the process is actually what's really to be embraced, I think.
Yeah.
So then it doesn't become all about getting published. It's actually about doing something well and that you gain something from.
Yeah, and that you can feel proud of as well, and not
exactly.
writing something because you feel that you should write it.
Yes, exactly.
I think that's really interesting. I saw something on Twitter the other day that said, just because you're not published doesn't mean you're not a writer.
No, exactly.
And I think that's really true. And I think there's a lot of kind of almost stigma for people that aren't published yet or have self-published or found an alternate way to do it. But actually, writing a book is a massive achievement and should be thought of as such, however it kind of comes to exist.
And it's about doing it well. I think you know, to keep improving is the challenge. So to get to grips with how you structure something. I mean, for me, I found plot very difficult. So it was kind of that was the challenge. How do you make this world into something that somebody else would enjoy reading about? And that was the challenge. So so even if it hadn't been published, I guess there would have been the point that I'd done that. I would have written something.
So tell me a bit about how people can find out where they can buy the book, how they can find out about you, and how they can see you at any coming events.
Well, the book's available at most bookshops. Waterstones, I know, are stocking it in Brighton, Lewis. And you can buy it directly from Salt on their website, and, of course, all the other, Amazon and Waterstones as well.
How can we see you?
I am going to be... The next sort of event is at the Lewis Live Literature event on December the 11th in Lewis, where there'll be Lem Sisse and some music, and I'll be talking about this book as well.
Amazing. Well, thank you very much. And I asked you to choose a song that you felt spoke to the feeling of your book. Could you talk a little bit about it before we play it?
Yes. Well, I chose a Fado... songs sung by Maritza, whom I adore, and also I thought my book was very much an exercise in sort of nostalgia and looking at a world that I grew up in, and sort of inventing the kind of household that I kind of remember from my own childhood, a very creative, loving, supportive world of my grandparents. So I wanted to kind of capture that and the feeling of old houses and in Sri Lanka. And so the song is very much about the sort of the Portuguese concept of saudade, which is longing and nostalgia. And I thought this is the perfect song for it.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you for having us. Thank you for coming on, Amanthi. It was lovely to speak to you. Welcome back to the Brighton Book Club on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM. I'm going to really have to try not to fangirl here, but I will, because Elizabeth is my dream woman. There's little she doesn't know about books and has never yet recommended something that I didn't love. Elizabeth works at City Books in Hove and also runs an amazing book Instagram page and newsletter. So I'm just going to basically quiz her about all things books and independent bookshops, get her to talk a bit about the books that she recommends. And then also she's going to be joining me to talk about Ronan Hessian's Leonard and Hungry Paul. Elizabeth, hi.
Hi.
You work at City Books, which is an independent in Hove.
Yes.
Why should we all shop independently?
I think there's so many reasons in general, so I'm going to talk specifically about independent bookshops. I think you get such a range of information that you maybe wouldn't get elsewhere. You get people's really honest opinions, which is great. It's local jobs, good for the local economy, good for the general economy, but also it's just nice. I feel like it's such a nice shopping experience to be in an independent bookshop that feels really personal, that knows the local area, and probably knows you if you're local as well.
Yeah, and you're not paid to do any, you're not paid for your opinions, right?
No, yeah. So everything I read and recommend is because I have read it and really liked it. As a general rule, I don't offer bad opinions. I wouldn't tell someone I really didn't like something. But if I've told you I really liked a book, I have really loved it.
Mm-hmm. And if you really didn't like a book but someone was trying to buy it, would you just suggest something alternative?
No, I wouldn't ever put anyone off reading a book only because all our tastes are so different. I know I have very specific tastes, but I can see that there are things I like in other books. The only time I'd ever tell someone a brutally honest opinion is if they really asked me and said, oh, I've heard conflicting stuff. Mm-hmm. What did you think? But I would always find something good about it as well.
Do you think there's something good in every book?
As a general rule, yeah, I think I do. I think just because there's always something so personal, I can always see a reason someone else might have liked it. But I think that's part of book selling rather than just being a reader. Other people are allowed to be more brutally honest.
Yeah, that's true. You write a newsletter.
I do.
Can you tell us about it, please, and how we can subscribe? Because I think everybody that loves books needs to.
Yeah, so I write a newsletter called Shelf Improvement. And I recommend 4 or 5 books on a theme, fortnightly, roughly. Sometimes it's more like 3 weeks. You can sign up. It's a tiny letter. So if you go to tinyletter.com/shelf-improvement, you can start getting the email from there.
What was your most recent one?
My most recent one was...
This is a trick question because I know it.
Totally right.
Books about cities.
Books about cities, that's right, yes.
So what books did you recommend in that one?
One of the ones was Saint Maisie by Jamie Attenberg, which I read recently and really loved. I also recommended a book called The Colossus of New York by Colson Whitehead, which is one of my favourite books of all time. I think it is incredible writing. I really recommend that one.
What do you think it is about books that are set in cities that captures your imagination as opposed to kind of books set on the moors?
Yeah, that's a really good question, and I didn't really think about it before writing this newsletter, but I think I'm just so interested in the ways our lives brush up against other lives. Mm-hmm. And I think the friction that happens there, the good things, the bad things, those things come through really clearly in cities where you have no choice but to, you know, be crushed against someone else on the bus or waiting to cross the road, that sort of thing.
Yeah, that's very interesting. What's your next one going to be about?
I haven't decided.
Okay.
It might be a Christmas gift finder.
Okay.
But I'm also thinking I might do something on dysfunctional families.
Oh, very interesting. Festive. Very festive. Instagram is a growing platform for book reviews. How do you think that Instagram, or more specifically Bookstagram, has influenced the industry and changed the way that people buy books?
I think from a bookselling perspective, I've definitely noticed books that I've seen talked about on Instagram get bought more frequently.
Mm-hmm.
So I do think at least the people that come into independent bookshops are definitely looking for their reviews on Instagram. I also think maybe it's demystified the publishing process a little bit. People who maybe wouldn't have known what proofs are or advanced reading copies are now more aware of that process of a book, you know, getting a publishing deal and then review copies going out and then being able to read them themselves if they're a blogger or a reviewer. I think it's also just widened your options for picking reviews. So if there's a particular influencer or whatever that you really like, whose taste you really like, you can go to them and you know whatever they're recommending is likely to be enjoyed by you as well.
And it's quite a friendly online community.
It's really friendly, yeah. I think as far as social media goes, book Instagram accounts are some of the happiest places I've found online, which is a really nice change.
It's nice to find a happy corner of online, because at the moment none of it is.
Yeah, there's few and far between.
Talk about recommendations. I actually found out about this month's book club book called Leonard and Hungry Paul on Twitter, and I just kept seeing people talking about it and talking about it and talking about it that weren't necessarily the publisher and wasn't necessarily the author. And I was thinking, well, if all these people are talking about it, maybe I should read it.
Yeah.
So I did, and so did you. So thank you very much for that. I'm going to now tell you one of my theories about books, which Elizabeth has heard many times. For me, a really good book needs to be two of the three. Beautifully written, you know, with prose that you just kind of can't believe are so good. Full of really well-observed characters that you're really on board with, or have a really gripping plot that moves you forward. So the writing, for instance, in many thrillers isn't actually beautiful writing, but they've got really engaging characters and a really engaging plot. You know, literary fiction might not be plot based, but you love the characters and you love the writing. So with Leonard and Hungry Paul, it's not a plot-driven book, right?
No.
I mean, there is. If someone said, oh, "What's it about?" I'd actually find it quite difficult
to describe.
To tell you, yeah. The characters are charming. It's a charming book.
It is charming. That's a really good word.
And there are definitely moments. There are lots of underlinable kind of moments.
Yeah, we were both doing the underlining quite a lot.
What did you think about it, Elizabeth?
It was such a welcome change from all the other fiction that I've read this year. I feel like there's been quite a lot of trauma and a lot of violence. This maybe says more about what else is going on than the publishing industry itself. But it was so nice to read a book that was, I mean, gentle and quiet, and a book that had some really refreshingly different male characters as well. That I really, really enjoyed. That gentleness, I think I actually needed it after a year of reading quite
traumatically.
Intense,
my year of reading
things.
Traumatically.
Yeah,
I think it's almost, it's kind of anti-novel in a way. I also think it would work as short stories. There's something really, you know, and I wonder actually if Ronan Hessian is a kind of, has a background in writing short stories, because there's this kind of self-containedness about the chapters that's quite nice.
And he's so good at those tiny little moments, that kind of the mundane bits of life that maybe you wouldn't imagine would make their way into a bigger novel. Actually, those little pinpoints of detail I really enjoyed.
Yeah, so, absolutely. Yeah, I think, who would you say that this would appeal for fans to fans of? That's quite a difficult question, isn't it? I actually don't know if I would be able to find an answer for that, because it is so unlike anything that I've ever read. Yeah. And it's quiet. And I think that quiet is used as something quite negative in commissioning, in publishing. You know, oh, it's not saying enough about things, because I feel like everything needs to be speaking to something bigger these days. But actually, there's something quite refreshing in just being a book that's just a book.
It's
just there, and it is what it is, and it's quaint and quiet and sweet. So I'd recommend it if you're looking for something that's kind of not necessarily plot driven, that has quite engaging characters, and that is quite a gentle read. Would you agree?
Yes, I would. I think that's a good summary.
I'm joined by Elizabeth from City Books, and we're going to be doing a kind of Christmas gift guide as told by Elizabeth. So what I've asked her to do is I'm going to name some of the kind of big selling books that of the last couple of years, and get her to do her kind of general recommendations, which she'd recommend that might be a bit alternative and you might not necessarily had heard of. Because we basically haven't stopped talking since we pressed stop on the radio show, Amanthi and Tammy are still with us in the studio, so you might well be hearing from them in the background, which is just lovely. It's just so wonderful to be with a group of amazing women who can write really well talking about books. I'm kind of in heaven. Are you?
Yes.
It's not just me.
Very much so.
Okay, cool. Well, let's start with Sally Rooney.
Yes.
Okay, so you might remember Sally Rooney from off of Normal People and Conversations with Friends.
Yes.
If you liked Sally Rooney, what else would you like, Elizabeth?
Yeah. Well, I have a few suggestions for
amazing.
This one.
Thank you.
If you like Sally Rooney and you haven't already read Outline by Rachel Cusk, you may well have done, but if you haven't, that would be top of my list of recommendations. If you have, I think you would really enjoy Ponty by Charlene Teo. It's a really beautiful novel about two teenage girls who are friends and the way that friendship changes as they've gotten older. That's a really interesting relationship.
It sounds a bit Elena Ferrante, is it?
A little, yeah, a little, yeah. Which is great, I love that. If you like Sally Rooney, but maybe you want something that's a bit funnier this time, I think you would like The Clasp by Sloane Crossley. Sloane Crossley is a writer, I love her essays, and The Clasp is her first novel. It's got a love triangle, it's got a literary mystery, it's hilarious, there's a trip to Paris. It's really good fun.
Amazing.
I think you would enjoy that too.
Girl on a Train.
Yeah, so if you're looking for another great thriller, I love The Party by Elizabeth Day. It's got mystery and intrigue at the heart of the British establishment. There's moments of real humour in there as well, with a really great mystery that unfurls through there. I also loved My Sister the Serial Killer.
Oh yes, I've been meaning to read that. Have either of you read that?
No. It's great, that's really good. So those would be my two suggestions for that.
So if I were to tell you that I loved Eleanor Oliphant is Completely Fine, yes. Which is a massive selling book a couple of years ago. What would you recommend?
So I was thinking for Eleanor, it seems to me that what readers loved so much about that book was Eleanor herself. Mm-hmm. So I've got a few other unforgettable female characters for you. Queenie by Candice Carty-Williams.
Candice Carty-Williams, yes. So, I've read that and I think it's very, very good. I'd recommend that.
That would be one of my suggestions. Also Saint Maisie. Mm-hmm. Which is by Jamie Attenberg, and it's about a woman that runs a cinema in New York during the Great Depression. She's a fantastic character. And another New York book with another fantastic woman is Lillian Boxfish Takes a Walk by Kathleen Rooney.
Lillian Boxfish takes a walk. Yeah, I struggle with my words at the best of times.
That's a great novel about a woman who every New Year's Eve she goes out for a meal by herself. That's how she chooses to celebrate her New Year's. And on this particular New Year, she decides to walk through New York to the restaurant, and she remembers the city as she goes.
What a lovely concept.
Really good.
Bill Bryson. So say I have an uncle that loves Bill Bryson and I want to buy him a book for Christmas.
All those uncles that love Bill Bryson. Yeah,
it's a kind of uncle author to love.
So for more funny non-fiction, I would always suggest The Cyclist Who Went Out in the Cold by Tim Moore.
Okay.
Tim Moore, some people might know as a sports writer, writes a lot about cycling. So he decided to cycle the route of the Iron Curtain Trail on a wooden bike.
That actually sounds horrible. Yeah.
It's part travelogue. I mean, the journey itself... a disaster sounds harsh because he makes it, but there are some troubles along the way. But also you get the history of the places and the countries, and there's a lot about Europe that I didn't know that I learned from this book. So it's, I think, a winning blend of history and humour and travel, but also some quite poignant moments that really stayed with me.
That sounds That's really great. Good, actually. And you don't have to love cycling to love it.
No, I can't ride a bike. So.
No.
Yeah.
Really?
No, yeah, that's true.
I don't cycle on principle.
On principle.
I was in a bike accident a few years ago and I was like, I'm not going to risk my life again.
Well,
I'm not good enough.
You would still like this book. But for something that's just interesting nonfiction, I really recommend Oranges by John McPhee.
It's
one of my all-time favourite books. It is literally just about oranges. It's one of the most interesting books I've ever read.
That's really... So one of my favourite books is Bluets by Maggie Nelson, which is basically just fragments of on the reflection of the colour blue. And it's just... If you say that, it kind of doesn't sound as intriguing as it is, but God, it's good. I really like super specific books.
Yeah, me too.
As well, there's something really... Niche. You can really get into it. If I told you that my brother liked Lee Child...
Yeah.
No, he doesn't read books, but no one in my life does, just me.
So for Lee Child, I mean, here in Brighton, we are just spoiled for brilliant crime writers.
There's a great
many.
Scene.
Yeah, so you've got Peter James. I really like William Shaw. Mm-hmm. There's Ellie Griffiths, Dorothy Coomson. So lots of options there. If you wanted to look a bit further away than Brighton, my very favourite crime thrillers at the moment are by Attica Locke. She's just started a series that's called Highway 59. Mm-hmm. The first one is called Bluebird, and the second one came out this year. That's Heaven, My Home. They are both fantastic.
And thrillers.
They're really, really clever because they've got fantastic plots, really intriguing mysteries at the heart of them, but some of the most incredible sensitive writing on modern day America that I've read, which is a really lovely blend in a book that is a page turner.
Did you read The Cutting Season?
No.
Oh, that's very good.
I'll make a note.
We were just talking about Instagram earlier, and I actually couldn't sleep at night if I didn't ask you to tell me your trick for enjoying Instagram.
I have some rules. So my rule for using Instagram in terms of who I follow is no influencers, no models, and like 3 or 4 celebrities that are people I feel like I just really want to hear more from and who improve my day by being there.
I'm going to ask you who they are now.
Are you? Yeah. So first is Jonathan Van Ness from Queer Eye.
Tell me about his book quickly. Is it lovely?
It's brilliant. Yeah. Yes, his memoir's fantastic. Mm-hmm. I really recommend that as a Christmas gift as
well. Oh, great, but we'll move on to that in a second.
So Jonathan Van Ness, Tracy Ellis Ross is just a ray of sunshine. She's fantastic. Gordon Ramsay and Phil Collins.
Wow. I'm almost speechless. Christmas gift guide.
Yeah.
What would be on it for you?
So you asked me a favourite Christmas book earlier, and my favourite Christmas book to read at Christmas is actually Skipping Christmas by John Grisham.
Okay.
It's not the sort of book that John Grisham usually writes. It's quite small. It's not crime or legal or anything. Mm-hmm. But it's just a joy. It's very funny and very sweet. And I think a really enjoyable thing to read at Christmas. I read it every year. Christmas for me is also a really good time for reading short stories because you just don't have any time to read a whole novel. Mm-hmm. So I'm reading New Daughters of Africa, edited by Margaret Busby, which is brilliant, full of just incredible writing.
Published by local independent, wonderful publisher, Myriad Editions.
Yeah.
Actually, that's another good thing to do around Christmas time is really support your independents and support your independent publishers as well as your independent bookshops.
Definitely.
You know, Waterstones don't need your cash as much as you guys do. And I probably get in trouble for saying that, but I think go and talk to someone and get a really good recommendation.
Yeah.
Buy a nice bookmark.
Yeah.
And they're easy to wrap.
They are so easy to wrap, yeah. And I would say trying to choose a book for someone that you think they might like is one of the sweetest gifts you can go for. And if you're really stuck, ask a bookseller. They'll always have a suggestion.
So in case you weren't listening to this with a pen and paper in your hand, as I'm sure really most of you were, Elizabeth and I will both pop this up on our respective Instagrams.
Yes.
So I'll put it up on the Brighton Book Club, which is at BTN Book Club. And how can we follow you, Elizabeth?
So mine is ec.reads.
So thank you very much to Elizabeth, Amanthi and Tammy for joining me in the studio today. Don't forget to look them up, follow them and let us know what you thought using the hashtag or tweeting me directly at Anna M. Burt. That's B-U-R-T-T. Please subscribe to the podcast. The more subscribers, ratings and reviews we get, the more that we can bring you. So I wanted to quickly mention a few things that are going on in Brighton in November and in December. So on the 22nd, Humble the Poet, whose new book No One Else Can Teach Us, will be in conversation at the Comedia. On the 28th, from 2 to 5pm, New Writing South are hosting a workshop run by playwright Dinos Aristodou, whose name I can't say, so I apologise, Dinos, as part of their Celebrating Our Stories project, collecting the stories of older LGBT plus people in the city. In the evening on the 28th, so no clashes, Andre Ackerman will be doing an event with City Books at the Brighthelm Centre, talking about his new book, Find Me, which is the follow-up to Call Me By My Name, which was a huge success as a book and a film last year. On next month's show, we're having a young adult special with local author of Outside, Sarah Ann Jukes, which is out now and published by Penguin. If you liked Emma O'Donoghue's The Room, you will love Outside. It's really, really, really good. Former Children's Laureate and local artist and author Chris Riddell will also be here and will be reading and reviewing former Brighton resident Dean Atter's Black Flamingo. The lovely team at Hodder Children's have kindly given me some copies to give to readers in the city. So if you'd like one, all you need to do is get in touch. As ever, you can get in contact on Twitter, Instagram, email. We've got some really good extra content for you on the podcast this month. We've got a Christmas gift guide, like I said, from Elizabeth at City Books. And we also have an interview with Ruth Wainwright at the Feminist Bookshop, which is now open on Upper North Street. Thank you to everyone who's tuned in this month. And thank you very much to my wonderful guests.